and welcome to another fun-packed edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm A.D. Packham, and we are penetrating the airwaves in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a mixed week on Planet Albion. First, on Saturday, most of us left the Amex trying to work out how we didn't win after a goalkeeping masterclass from Ben Foster kept us at bay. And then on Wednesday, we dodged a potential fourth-round banana skin as we got past West Brom at the Hawthorns thanks to two extra-time goals from Glenn Murray. Frank Lampard's derby await in the fifth round next week.
I'm glad you called them by their right name.
Indeed, yes. Today we welcome Ashley Barnes' Burnley. And back to the Amex. And we have to do it without Florin Andoni as we bid for our first win in five since we beat Everton back in December. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wears, and we're delighted to welcome back a man who used to be an Arsenal fan, but he's all right now. It's TV critic and author of the book Goalhammer, Mike Ward.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, AD and Al.
And a little bit later on, we'll also be hearing from Guy Butters.
What, will he still be having his breakfast? Which he started at about 9:30.
Well, this is it. Well, I spoke to him a couple of minutes ago, and he was just off for a fry app, which basically meant us having to have the discussion about
snack to him.
What is the perfect breakfast? I mean,
hang on. We had the discussion, which is the perfect fry up, and as we worked out, there is a difference between a fry up and a breakfast.
Mike, tell us about it.
The difference between the fry up. Well, you were saying
yes.
That the fry up, hang on, let me get this right. The breakfast could include.
No, it can't include.
Can't include. Okay, the breakfast can't include potato products.
Correct.
Of any kind. But I would argue that the hash brown is an exception.
You see, Mike, Al's in the minority just for a change.
Yes.
I agree that a hash brown, which is a potato product, is the perfect accompaniment to your bacon and eggs.
If you're talking breakfast, I mean, obviously you're talking about the basics of egg, bacon, sausages. Okay, they are the staple. If you take any one of those out, you don't have a breakfast. You just got some stuff.
Well,
then you've got beans. You have to have toast. Fried bread is fine and good enough. I can't help feeling that hash browns are a sort of substitute for. You might as well put chicken nuggets on there for me.
I'm going to have to
no chips.
Well,
chips is not part of a breakfast.
But egg and chips is
just.
Yeah, you don't call it breakfast, but fantastic.
No,
but
just for parity, yeah. I mean, I've got to go with if our friend Andy Bass was here today, yeah. He would be saying potato on a breakfast, definitely.
Personally,
Andy Bass is wrong as well.
Yeah,
so,
but we are going to get the definitive answer when we speak to Guy a little bit later.
What I would say is actually they do a superb fry up here at the open market. And they do one of those sort of like huge mega buster things of £12, eat it in half an hour, you can have it for free. But half the plate is chips, and that's what fills you up.
Yeah. Actually, I have to. While we're talking about this, we have to talk about the new Marks and Spencer's Valentine's product.
The love sausage.
The love sausage.
Are we going to be taken off air for talking about it?
Well, it's a sausage that's in the shape of a heart. It's a love sausage.
Talking of which, I was very impressed with Glenn Murray against West Brom.
Indeed. All the important issues talked about here on Radio Reva today, and Mike, it's been a while since you've been in. I was doing some research on you this week, and fortunately for my eyes, I didn't have to read the Daily Star, so that's good news.
Thank you very much.
And or the Express for that matter.
Thank you very much.
I was around at my mum's the other day, and she had the Daily Express on the
she's in Burgess Hill,
and she had it sitting on the side there. This was this week, and I cannot believe there was a picture of Princess Diana on the front. Let it go.
So
it's 30 years ago.
It's 20. Like, so what part did you play in that then, Mike?
What, the Princess Di thing?
Yeah.
What, as in her death?
Yes.
Well, where are we going with this before we carry
on? Let's move it on. So,
well, I'm just thinking actually currying favour with your new employers. That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So you're actually a staffer there, or are you freelance?
Are we talking about currying?
I write for them.
Got ya.
There we go. Okay, but I mean, I couldn't believe that it was 2002 that Goalhanger came out. I mean, that's 17 years ago.
So for those who've only just learned to read, tell us about Goalhanger.
Goalhanger, I won't bang on about it because it does sound as if I'm banging on about something from ancient history.
But
effectively was.
It's still relevant now.
It was a diary of my first season as an Albion fan, having jumped ship from previously having been a lapsed, I would say, Arsenal fan. Basically, I'd fallen out of love with football. I'd been an Arsenal fan since I was a kid, but hadn't really gone for years. And the year of the, what was it, the fourth, was it the fourth division title, then the third?
I'm getting confused. That's the, 01 into 02.
Yeah, so basically I saw what was going on down the road from me at Withdean when the Albion won the old fourth division title. Thought, oh, that looks like fun. I want some of that in that completely appalling, shallow...
shack.
I'm not going to go to the ground. No, I love the ground. I miss the ground dearly.
You're not the only person to say
no,
that.
No,
it seems weird.
I will get on to that in a minute because sure. I will bang on about this forever. Yeah. Anyway, so basically I just thought I'd write this diary with no great expectation and I sort of contacted a few independent publishers who sort of specialise in sports books, etc, etc, and I think basically what it boiled down to is when they could see that we were actually going to go up, they thought, oh, this might sell a bit, so they published this diary of my first season, which of course was a very happy one because it concluded with a second consecutive title.
Well, it's all part of actually sort of like this 20-year narrative. Now, obviously, yesterday was the 22nd anniversary of Fans United, and it brings a lot of things back to a lot of people, and not just sort of like great memories of a sort of strange and funny and foggy day and the fact we won 5-0 and all the battles that we had and the despair in football terms that we had as Brighton fans, but the intervening two decades. And obviously, you know, you're talking about Withdean. We know it was a rubbish place, and it was very much only ever supposed to be for 3 or 4 years. But like you say, Aidy, like you say, Mike, it's a place that actually evokes very happy memories. Some absolutely terrible ones as well. Walsall springs to mind. But some great ones. You know, Bobby Zamora tearing up the fourth division and then the third division. Danny Cullip actually shouting the pigeons out of the trees every time there was a goal kick. Yeah. And so on. I mean,
people setting off fireworks in the trees.
Everyone could easily, probably within, if you ask them, within 5 minutes could come up with 20 highly positive memories of their time at Withdean. But it's actually part of this greater narrative of the 20 years of where we got to now.
The time enough times elapsed now, and this is the usual thing. But
go on.
I probably can't really think of 20 bad memories. I could think of more than 20 happy memories, but I couldn't probably think. Obviously, getting wet and getting sunstroke and pleurisy at the same time.
Well, I mean, when you think of certain days, I think you think of things like the first game where it was sunny and we won 6-0. You think of the last day. All right, we lost, but it was sunny and we got presented with a trophy. And then there's kind of this blur in between where you go to a night game. There's times where you're absolutely frozen. Like you say, you got absolutely sodden. It was so many different things to so many different people. And yet I think that, you know, that you lose the negativity. I mean, we had a couple of relegations there. We had four promotions, you know, and these things, it's part of the story which says, Withdean, 1999 to 2011, four promotions, relegations, a battle, you know, and many friendships that were made, that are still relevant now, were made back then. And it was because of Withdean.
Yeah. And I mean, there are lots of stories that have been told and will be told from that era.
And they should be.
And they're mostly available on our archive at albionroar.co.uk. But we'll come back and talk to you about that a little bit later on. But we've got a game to talk about first, which is last Saturday. 0-0 draw with Watford.
How fresh them, nil, didn't we?
They were lucky to get nil. It was, I mean, Ben Foster, firstly,
particularly towards the end. I mean, it was pretty awful for a huge proportion of the game.
First half was pretty poor,
but the last, I don't know, it felt like the last 10 minutes or so, we had endless opportunities, but it was all a bit too little, too late.
I went with my brother. My brother doesn't go very often, and he was like, wasn't overly impressed with it. He said, "The boys aren't doing so well today."
Everyone's a critic,
but I mean, it was like
funny you should say that.
I had my daughter with me as well, and she was more interested in like talking about four LFA Cups, to be honest, which is like, I said, that's a couple of weeks.
It followed on. What it had done, it had followed on from the FA Cup match the first match against West Brom, where again, we very unusually this over the past sort of 18 months, where we bossed a game, where we were the dominant team. And it's almost as if to say, right, well, we're so used to not having possession, what do we do with the ball now? But you also had, and you saw it to a certain extent, and we know we'll get onto it later, we also had it in the replay against West Brom, where, you know, we controlled the midfield. I mean, you're saying it was the last 10 minutes. I felt actually for most of the second half, we won't say we controlled the game, but we had so much of the ball. But
well, this is something
so
that has
clueless
been
as to what to do with it. And add to that the woeful finishing.
But this is something that had been levelled, particularly in the first game against West Brom. It's like, we're not used to having that much of the ball. We're so used to playing on the counter attack.
I mean, we're saying this as an excuse. It doesn't hold water. I mean, these professional footballers that know how to finish, and they really should know how to. And again, you know, I think that the three games that we're talking about, I know there's been games in between, but the first West Brom game, the Watford game, and the replay against West Brom, in all three, the shooting, the finishing, apart from the oldest swinger in town, couldn't shoot for toffee. Don't get me wrong, the chances we had on target were good saves by Ben Foster.
They were magnificent saves by Ben Foster. I mean, yeah. I think they're ones
he should have made.
Well, I'm not sure. Because, I mean, I've been watching, writing the show this week, I've had to watch the highlights again.
You write it.
And, I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I was looking, I mean, the two saves from Lucardia, which were both going right into the top corner, he couldn't have placed it better.
But they weren't bullet headers, were they? I mean, the ones that they could get, he could get to.
Yeah, maybe you could, you could have a little bit of criticism, there could have been more power behind it, but the goalkeeper has to come right away across the goal, and he's really straining every sinew in his body to get there. And it was, there was...
It's a good job he's 6 foot press.
Absolutely. On the Watford's Twitter page, the official one, they announced, no point
well,
in there.
They put a poll, what was man of the match? Was it Ben Foster's right hand, his left hand, his left leg, or his
absolutely limb of the match.
Yeah. Absolutely genius. But I mean, there was a lot of huff and there was a lot of effort that went in, but nothing was really coming off. And Davy Prepper, who's never going to score, is he?
Yes, he is. Is he going to score for us? Let's put it that way.
But I mean,
I'll tell you what, he is actually. This sort of like, who's the player in form, who's your player of the month? I've got to say that, and it's for the past half dozen matches, Davy Prepper has actually been playing brilliantly. You know that's completely screwed up against Burnley this afternoon by us saying that, but I think Davy Prepper has been arguably our best player on form recently.
Yeah, no, there's no argument really for me.
Okay, Mike?
I wouldn't dispute that. I'm still actually, in my head, the image that I've still got is that one that was on Twitter of Lewis Dunk on the ground, that sort of defending with his head.
Well, yes, we'll come to that. Because, I mean, there's nutters in football, and then there's...
That is just madness. I mean, if I were playing football, I'd just say, look, go and score, because I'm not going to have my head kicked in. You just have the goal, mate.
Yeah, just to upset a few people here, he probably should have given away an indirect free kick in there because there was obstruction.
Yeah,
he was actually moving the ball between his legs. It was like that game at that party game where you have to like move the balloon from one leg to another.
Which is a game I find very disturbing. I'll tell you what.
Found the idea of the game disturbing, or having taken part in the game, you found it disturbing?
Bit of both.
Okay, fine.
Bit of both. And we haven't had the team news yet, AD, from that game.
Okay. We were originally unchanged.
Yeah.
And then there was Dale Stevens injured himself in the warm up. Eve Bissouma came in. But
And here's a fella who's kind of he's kind of really sort of come to the fore a bit, but you know.
He's got your mic's a bit quiet now. That's what I'm saying. You need to play with the knob.
Ah.
All right, carry on. Go on, carry on, Mike. Eve Bissouma, discuss, Mike.
Discuss what? While you're adjusting your microphone. Inconsistent. My first impressions of him were when did he actually first appear? What was the first game that he actually played?
It was a home game against Watford.
It was a pre-season friendly. The first game he appeared, and his first start was against Southampton.
Yeah, and I was sort of raving about him to a guy who normally sits with me, who wasn't there for that match, and then so the next time he sort of turns up and he comes on, and I think, right, you're going to watch this guy. He is absolutely brilliant. He runs his heart out. He's got guts. He's got strength. He's got creativity. I think he's a real find, and I think he could do us a fantastic job for the future, etc., etc. And he was terrible in the next game. And he just he has one of those.
He had a bit of a brain fart against.
Yeah,
Liverpool,
I think it's just there's a sort of inconsistency. You know, it's not the only player's inconsistent by any means. Every player's inconsistent, but he's just one of those that was very quickly. Didn't waste much time in making my original comments look utterly absurd. I don't even know if it's as straightforward as that. Sometimes you're sometimes watching a lesser team, and you're just assuming that this is the opportunity for that player to really come into their own, to really shine. And yet, for some reason, you just think that player will work against a lesser team. That player's not going to establish himself against a team with any kind of substance to them. But even that theory doesn't hold true when it actually comes to it. I don't know, football. Frustrating performances.
Absolutely. Now, we're having a little bit of a play around in the studio here, because it seems that Mike 3 has now conked out. And we're not talking about the chap next to me. We're talking about the thing I speak into. Under normal circumstances, most people would be delighted that my microphone has conked out. But sorry, that's not going to be good enough for now. So
I just explain, by the way, that's why for the last 30 seconds I was talking absolute gibberish.
No. Listen.
We have to clarify that.
We've spent 1 hour... every week for the past 10 years doing exactly that.
But to be honest, if you could just see the two of you now, it looks like a really, really bad pop video.
No,
it's
I was thinking I'm going to do the Starman thing in a minute. You're my Mitt Ronson.
It looks like you're doing We Are the World, but...
And I just go to the old David Bowie.
With middle-aged blokes instead of young
pop
stars.
And the kiddie in the rainbow tank top behind that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's of all the things on that particular Top of the Pops thing, you got the fella with the sort of like the furry sideburns on the drums.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And they're doing the kind of the girls in the maxi skirts, and the kiddie who looks like he really shouldn't be there, who looks like he's thankfully escaped Jimmy Savile, and is wearing his sort of rainbow tank top, forever looking at the monitors. That for me is the highlight of that entire clip.
And also, I think because I looked that up, and I think people have done research into who that guy was, I was fascinated by it. I don't think it came to any great conclusions, but it's also I'm going off a slight tangent.
No,
I will come back in it.
Now, bored of football, mate.
But wasn't it? Doesn't the contrast between the audience and the act could not be more extreme? And if anything sums up how revolutionary that performance was, wasn't just seeing them in isolation, it's seeing them in contrast to their audience.
Absolutely.
And that sort of, you know, the typical 70s kid in the tank top.
Well, yeah, the whole thing about... I think got a feeling that was Bowie's first appearance on Top of the Pops, wasn't it? No, actually...
Are tank tops ever going to come back?
Not in that style.
No. Let's move it on.
Hang on. Never mind the football. You know, this is an important cultural point.
You notice I'm much stronger on this than I am on Bissouma.
Well, you wait till the outro music. You know, you wait till the outro music. You know,
okay.
No, it's a superb piece of sort of cultural history, cultural footage.
Yeah.
And you know, but that tank top. I mean, you have to also think about it. If that kid was about 16, 17 then, he's in his early 60s now.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I hope he's still around.
One would hope so. Still wearing tank tops.
See, this is what happens when you draw 0-0. It's
absolutely
when you have two 0-0 draws
say,
in a
this
row.
This is the sort
actually.
Of conversation I have during the match as well. So this is not unusual. This to me is football talk.
Okay. But we're not finishing with Starman. Okay?
But just to finish off on Watford.
We
had 21 shots on goal, which is pretty good for us, really.
Most of only which four, ended up
only
in
four,
the stands.
Only four, yeah. Only if you've got points for putting the goal between the post and the corner flag, that's, you know, we're home and hosed. But
to be fair, even Lacardi had missed that.
Yeah, well, 21 shots on goal, 4 on target. Watford, 5 shots, none on target. That tells the story.
I think the best chance, I think the weirdest save, and you know what kind of weird game it is when you've got a Shane Duffy overhead kick. Is saved by the goalkeeper. He scrambles across with his feet. That's the kind of weird game we have.
Yeah, true.
I mean, under any other circumstances, I remember about 5 years ago when we had Calder in, Inigo Calder on in. And we were talking about doing flying overhead kicks. And he said, even then, I'm too old to do that. I said, no, Kevin Phillips does that, and he's nearly 40. And he said, no, he shouldn't be doing that age. Now, don't get me wrong, Shane Duffy's not that old, but someone that size should not be doing flying overhead kicks. You realise that there's going to be a huge, great big dent in the pitch he lands.
You're saying he should be playing for Chievo. He should have gone with Shikata. Yeah, yes. And what's their nickname?
Go on.
Flying Donkeys. Seriously, that is their nickname. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb.
No, you're not. You're really not.
FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on our podcast, and of course...
Everywhere. On Alexa.
Yeah, if you've got a smart speaker, same. Play Radio Reverb, and alas, there we are. But we are delighted to be brought to you, of course, in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. I'm just passing this over to Mike to describe this particular thing that is very blue.
Oh, it is, yes. It's blue with a lovely yellow trim, V-neck, yellow trim on the short cuffs, and a yellow band across the top. With the sponsor's name.
Okay, any ideas what that might be?
Can I say the sponsor's name?
You can say the sponsor's name, yeah.
Well, it's Laing, L-A-I-N-G.
I mean, it's very Boca Juniors, this shirt. It is very blue. It's got a very faint pinstripe. It's similar to ones that, of its era. I mean, I'll tell you, this is what it is. And there is a link to next week's opponents, Michael.
Okay, sorry, link to Derby?
Yes.
Okay.
Any idea who it is? The badge is on the kit, just to give you a clue.
No, I'm probably being really stupid here. I've not a clue.
Okay, so here we go. This is your...
You're hesitating. Is this guy an idiot? Am I being really thick here?
It's, I've got Al talking gibberish behind me.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Here you go. This is your shirt of the week. And it's a nod to next week's visit by Frank Lampard's Derby County, to give them their official name.
Yes.
This is the 1985 to 1986 home shirt of Southend United. The very last shirt that the original Frank Lampard Sr., wore as a professional footballer before his retirement.
Obscure link. Wow. Yeah. I was thinking Derby, and then it's Southend. Is that what we're really saying?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah. But this was League One Southend, known as the
Red
Shrimpers
Harry.
Or the Seasiders. They play at the delightful Roots Hall Stadium with a capacity of 12,392. Roots Hall was originally a sand quarry after World War One, and then it was used as a landfill site. Southend built their stadium there and played their first game there in 1955 against Norwich City. Up until 1988, Roots Hall was the youngest football stadium in the Football League. I didn't know that, actually.
There you go.
Yeah.
The things you don't know.
Did you know that?
I knew that Roots Hall was I know Carrow Road was fairly new, or newish in comparison, but I didn't realise that Roots Hall was that young.
Who knows what ground opened in 1988 to become the new youngest football ground in the league?
I'm guessing that would be Scunthorpe's ground, which would be Glamper Park.
That is correct.
That's why I do quizzes, and that's why I never win.
There was another gag there, but I'm still not going there. Okay, the original Frank Lampard played 38 times for Southend under the manager Bobby Moore before he decided to retire
that was
in
just
1986.
For the boys, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Southend seemed to have plenty of rivals. They considered Colchester, Ipswich, Orient, Gillingham, Dagenham, Redridge as their own burning smell up the road, says Phil.
I'd have said it was Canvey Island, and that was it.
There are three links to the Albion. All of which were who were player of the season for Southend, actually. Goalie Simon Royce was Southend's player of the year in the 1995-1996 season. He turned out for the Albion on loan from Leicester in 2001-2002. Left-back Keith Dublin made 132 appearances for the Albion before ending up at Southend, playing 180 times for them. He was the player of the season in 96-97. And Nathan Jones was player of the season there in 1999-2000. And there's one more link for you. In the 2000 and 2001 season, the Shrimpers' top scorer was David Lee.
Now,
I know a man who knows a little bit about David Lee. If only we could get him on the phone. Hey. Guy Butters, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hello, how was your fry-up?
It's all right, mate. Yeah, it went down rather well. It was expertly cooked.
Yes. Now, basically, we've been having a debate here. We had a nil-nil draw to talk about, so we decided to talk about what makes the perfect fry-up instead. Now, Al's saying no potato products. I'm saying potato products. What is the definitive answer?
Depends if you've got the time. I normally... Yeah, I can have put the odd hash brown on there, but I'm not a great fan of it. I'm a traditionalist, really. Like me old black pudding and things like that on there.
good stuff. Well, but thanks for joining us, Guy. Now, obviously, you've seen a lot of us over the last few years or so. Now, what have you made of our season thus far this year, and our career in the Premier League as a whole?
Uh, I think we're doing okay. I think, you know, we sort of the last few weeks where the results haven't really gone for us. Before that, we were sort of threatening to get sort of, you know, not far off the top 10. It's, you know, but then obviously, like I said, a little dip in form, a couple of results went the wrong way. But, you know, we're still in there. We're still battling away. We've got a very important game today, I think, Burnley. I'd like to think that we, you know, we could be beating teams like that around us and, you know, sort of a six-pointer today. So, yeah, I think they've done okay. Topping that off with a decent cup run as well. You know, I'm still a believer that it's early days for us in the Premier League. You know, we're still finding our feet still. You know, and I still believe that it's all about just staying in there. Keep staying in there, keep surviving, you know, keep building, building the squad up. And I think we'll be okay. I think we hopefully could be one of them sort of teams like a Bournemouth who remain in there for a number of years.
Now, I was talking to you on Thursday, Guy, and you were telling me all about the importance of a cup run to your league form.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good for the players, especially the ones that are on the fringes of the squad. You know, they don't really get that many chances to play in the first team, some of them nowadays. So I think it's good for a good cup run to give them a lot of games. All of a sudden, it takes one or two injuries in the first team, and then you're going to be looking at one or two of them players to be coming in and expected to hit the ground running. Because of the way that the setup is nowadays in football teams and leagues, I don't think they don't have any reserve teams anymore. So you're probably playing games for under 23s, development squads or whatever. So you're not really getting a regular game of football against, you know, real top players. With the old reserve system, I used to love it because one week, you know, you could be, when you're a young lad of 18, you could be all of a sudden playing against a 34-year-old player come back from injury at Arsenal or something. And, you know, it's really good experience for you. You probably learn more in 1 year playing that style of football than you probably would 3 or 4 years doing it another way. But, yeah, I think, you know, like I say, I like a good cup run. It's I've been there at clubs that have had great cup runs, got through to the semi-final at Portsmouth, got through to the quarterfinals when I was at Gillingham, and also got through to the final when Tottenham got through to the final, sorry, when I was an apprentice. So, you know, it's a great day out for the whole club and the whole city.
What do you make, though, of all these clubs resting the senior players for the competition? Do you think it devalues it?
I'm not sure devaluing. Like I said, it's football's changed. I mean, I sound like an old dinosaur when I waffle on half the time.
so do we, mate. But
yeah, I understand, you know, that people, it's the way it is. And like I say, you know, you're going to have a lot of people knocking on your doors and managers wouldn't know why they're not in the first team. And especially when a cup game turns up, you know, they start off in the early rounds, you put out... They call them weaker sides. I don't like calling it because I think every person who's a professional footballer should be good enough to play in the first team anyway. So they put them players out in the lower rounds. And then obviously when you keep going well and having a really good cup run, all of a sudden, when do you stop and then put the first team out as such, if you know what I mean? It's, what, do you wait till the quarterfinals before you actually think, oh, we've got a chance to win it, here we go, first team? Or do you say, no, actually, you boys have earned the right to play in every round because you're the ones that started off in the lower league, in the lower rounds. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you stick with them sort of same squads. And as I said before, you know, someone gets injured, a winger gets injured, you know, all of a sudden you're going to be looking at Yorkies or someone to come in and try and be in the first team. So they've got to be hitting the ground running. You can't afford nowadays to give someone 4 or 5 games in the first team to get fit. Yeah, they've got to be, like I say, they've got to be fixed when they first come in.
Yeah, and the team that we put out on Wednesday night, with the exception of Dan Byrne, he's only just really joined us technically. I mean, obviously, I know he came in the summer, but he's come back on loan from Wigan, hasn't he? But with the exception of him, everyone in that team have played at least 3 games in the Premier League for this season. So, I mean, you know, it was, as a scratch side, that's as strong a side as we could possibly put out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Bournemouth game and I thought everyone's going, oh, you know, like who they're going to put out, it's a weaker side. And I looked at it and thought, actually, it's a very good side. You know, that could hold its own in the Premier League. You know, that would give a good account of itself in the Premier League. It's, you know, you like I said, every single player, I believe now, if you're in a squad of, say, 20, 25, whatever it be, every single one of them players should be good enough to play in any game in the Premier League or in a cup game. Otherwise, what's the point of being there?
Okay. Now, Guy, you've been retired for a while now.
Just remind him.
I know. Now, your last Albion appearance, can you remember when it was?
It was probably, no, I was supposed to be down to play Bristol Rovers away. And then I obviously got left out of the squad for that one. And I didn't make the last game against Swansea either. But I think, I'd say Cheltenham away.
No, it wasn't. It was the 19th of April 2008. We won 2-1. It was against Hartlepool. And any okay. ideas who scored?
Bas Savage?
No.
Oh, it's not that game where Bas Savage did scored a last minute winner.
No, it was with Dean.
Oh, was it with Dean? Was that okay? It wasn't you, was it, Guy?
Oh no, that was the away game, wasn't it? The Bas Savage one. Yeah, no, yeah. It might have been.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was the two goal scorers this week. They're kind of like intrinsically linked this week. It was Glenn Murray and Dean Cox.
Okay.
Hashtag snigger.
Just talking about links. I actually play for Southend. I don't know if you mentioned that earlier.
No, Phil's missed out on a whole load of links there. We're talking Paul Clark, we're talking Jerry Fell, and, you know, going back a bit, you know, there's probably an awful lot of links between that.
Is,
when did you play for Southend then, mate?
I was only on loan.
Right.
I was only on loan from Tottenham when I was 1989, I think that was, 89, 90, something like that.
Yeah.
Dave Webb was manager. They got promoted from the old fourth division.
Did you get a medal that year?
I'm not sure if I did. I don't think I did, to be honest. I remember he rung me up and invited me out on the boys' outing at the end of the year. But unfortunately, partner I was with at the time, we just had a daughter, so couldn't go. But I always remember, it's great. I loved the place, Roots. It was really old-style ground in them days. And
That double-decker stand is a bit strange, isn't it? It's quite cool.
Yeah, but it wasn't there then.
And at the car park, the massive car park they got, obviously on a Sunday, it was car boot sale in there. And I think that's where they got most of the kit from.
It's where they got the players, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Every week it was like a different shade of shorts.
I kind of thinking as you mentioned that Paul Barr was missing a trick by not having a car boot sale at the Amex every Sunday.
Exactly. I think, you know, I'll be there.
I want to buy a car boot.
he likes to get his value out of employees, so yeah.
But Guy, these days then, let's fast forward to...
I want to rewind quickly before you go on there.
Go on.
Basically, I was going to say, because that game against Hartlepool, obviously Glenn Murray scored in that game. This week, by my reckoning, that his second goal against West Brom this week was his 200th career goal. Now, are you
your reckoning or someone? Or we've got some stats. Now,
I've
don't get me
stats,
wrong.
Yeah.
Your stat last week about being the first time that went viral. Well done, mate. Top statting there.
Well, I thought you was going to say it was the link was it came off the same sort of part of his body. For the goal at Hartlepool as well.
What, his head? No.
I'm not going to say a word. I'm not saying anything. We're live.
No, this is actually this does actually sort of it concerns ourselves that we might end up descending into Ros Basford's pantomime, bawdy pantomime.
But the question I was going to ask though, Guy, was obviously you've played with Glenn. So are you surprised that he's still going strong and at this level?
Not really. I think when he first came, I always remember he was. Like, you know, and he doesn't look it, but he was a good athlete when he came to the club. He got a great leap on him. He used to hold the ball up really well, knew where the net was. And, you know, I've been down to talk to him a couple of times at the ground, bumped into him a few times and sort of like, you know, what's your secrets? Or, you know, just had a joke. But I think a lot of the stuff, you know, the sports science side of football nowadays, I think that there's going to be a lot more players going on until their sort of late 30s. You know, the stuff that they've been training, the way they look after the players now, the stuff that the diets, etc., and all the supplements, blah, blah. Mm. I think that's got a massive part to play with it as well. And also, and again, sorry to sound like another dinosaur. I think with the way that football is now, you can't. It's not. I'm not silly to say it's a non-contact sport nowadays, but in the old days, you know, we probably would have been on the end of a few more robust challenges, which would have taken its toll a little bit, I think. And nowadays,
what do you know about those?
Yeah, I know. I've tried to put in a few one or two times, but I couldn't get near anyone quite quick enough.
I believe the correct term is a reducer, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, I think that's a massive part of it as well. You know, people, you ain't got defenders going through the back of you nowadays, or elbowing you in the face and in the head, and all this sorts of stuff that used to go on. So I think that plays a big part of it as well. And like I say, look at the pitches as well. Every single one's a carpet. They don't really play on the old mud heaps anymore, where. You know, they cause quite a few injuries as well. So I think it's a mixture of a lot of stuff. But also, you know, the main thing is the person himself. You know, he's obviously a good player. He's a good lad. and he looks after himself, which is the main thing.
Absolutely, and it's not as always fussy about what part of his body he scores with. Now moving on, I'm up to 2019. Now it's kind of common knowledge that everyone knows that you've been working for quite a while now with Albion the Community alongside Danny Cullip. So just give us a refresher as to what it is you do there, and I assume hopefully you're enjoying it there still.
Yeah, fantastic. Me and Danny both work on the education side of things at the Community Scheme. We've got a lot of boys doing the college course. It used to be the BTEC, it's changed now, but you can get a qualification in diplomas in sport. So basically what we do, we've got 80 students in. We do futsal, playing a futsal league. So we train Monday, Tuesday and Thursdays, also 11 aside teams. And we play against other Community Schemes on a Wednesday and a Friday. So it's going really well. And that then takes care of all our mornings. So in the afternoons, we're out fundraising. We're out helping out with disability stuff. It's brilliant. The way that the scheme works and you've been there. You boys have been involved with it, and you've seen the actual stuff at the coalface and where the stuff goes. I mean, you, Julie Hoddercup, you know, etc. The list is endless.
No, it's great stuff. So you're working in the education department, but does that also sort of include the social inclusion bit as well? I mean, are these the kids you're working with?
Yeah, everything. I mean, school ideas, we go down to down near White Oak out on the little bits of grass down there with Martin Schooley, who runs that department, and he's got about 25 kids down there, you know, and all involved in football. It's great to see, getting them involved in sports, keeping them out of trouble, etc. So it's really good.
Now, Guy, you've got quite a few things coming up with that as well. you and Steve Darby trying to ride a bike together is one, which is the is it Antwerp you're going to this year?
Yeah, Antwerp. Yeah, apparently someone said it's the home of diamonds or something.
Yes,
so
it
I'm
is.
Not
yeah.
sure what the missus thinks. Don't know what the missus thinks. I'm going to be bringing her back. I'm not sure.
It's going to be the world's slowest diamond blag, isn't it? And that's what you're going over there
you're
for.
Not wrong, yeah, all escape.
Yeah, well, escape on push bikes. There's a film there, Ness.
It's a plot from Only Fools and Horses,
I
think.
Need one more.
You've got that.
We need one more person, and we can borrow a bike from the goodies.
So, how do you get involved in doing the bike ride this year, Guy?
If you literally go onto the website, anything to do with Albion Community, and contact, the main ones to contact are fundraising@albioncommunity.org.uk. All the stuff's on there. All the information is on there. We've also got a blue and white day coming up on the 29th of March as well. So any companies or any people that want to get on board and raise funds for Albion Community, they can do something at work, you know, raise funds by doing a dress down day or a keepy uppy challenge or anything like that. So go on the website, on the club's website, and click on the link for Albion Community. It'll be on there as well. So hopefully everyone can get involved.
Just one thing, talking of fundraising, I appreciate it might be considered a little bit of a competition to you, but on the 15th of March at the Amex at the Mayo Wynn Baxter Lounge, we've got the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund quiz, the annual quiz night. So, and it's the night before a game. So do you reckon you can get AITC to raise a team or two?
Hope so, yeah. I mean, I quite like a pub quiz. I like to think that I'm not one of the traditional thick footballers, although a lot of people will disagree with that.
Well, come along to the quiz and we can find out.
Yeah, it'd be a good shout, actually. Yeah, I'm going to suggest it, to be honest. I generally do like a quiz.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And, Guy, I mean, while we're talking about such things, when was the last time you pulled on your boots?
I play charity games quite a lot. Try and get something set up with a couple of ex-Brighton players. We've got a lot of people requesting it, so I think there's a lot of games coming up in the future. I play for Pompey Vets, so we not the actual ones that look after animals. I mean the vets. I play lots of games for them, and also we're trying to get another game team set up from another company over Bournemouth way, and it's all about raising money for charities as well. So it's great. Beauty of it, it's half keeps you fit, although when you look at me sometimes not really people will realise that.
But you could be my size.
But you sort of going out and meeting mates that you ain't seen for a couple of years and, you know, back in the change room and having that buzz again and having that good banter flying around, and it's almost like you ain't gone away. So that's a big reason why you also get involved with it, because you like, you know, you haven't seen, say, like Richard Carpenter, I haven't seen him for a while, so it's all of a sudden Chippy comes down to play.
How is he?
You straight... He's brilliant, yeah. He's sort of hitting it off straight away again.
Has
his
nose shrunk yet?
No, he's working outdoors. He does a lot of stuff on the railways. He's just an outdoor person. He loves it. He tried to get, when he was at Brighton, I think he was trying to get an apprenticeship of being a blacksmith and shoeing, you know, like horseshoer and all that stuff. But he couldn't, unfortunately, I don't think he could get anyone to sort of take him on as an apprentice. But but he loves it. He loves the outdoors. He's got a bit of Romany in him, I think. So I think he's an outdoory person. So yeah, he's good. I mean, like, you know, Kerry, obviously, Gary Hart, stand up for games, Tommy Fraser. And we have a good laugh. Budgie play sometimes when he can get around.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good crack.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let us know when the next one is, and we'll give it a plug, and we'll come down and give you a cheer.
Be horrible, yeah.
Be horrible. Fantastic. I will give you brilliant. A cheer. But many thanks for that, guy. And don't forget, when's the Blue and White Day again?
It's on the 29th of March.
Okay, and so just go to albioninthecommunity.co.uk. Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you very much, chaps.
Right. Well, many thanks for that, guy, and we'll see you soon.
No worries. Take care. Bye-bye.
That, of course, was the ever-evervescent.
Evergreen, ever-evervescent, ever-present. Oh, brilliant. No, he sounds really well, doesn't he? So.
Yeah, Guy, and we love Guy. Guy is...
Absolutely.
I mean, he's another one back from that With Dean era, Mike, which was just...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he kind of like symbolises that era in a way.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think, talking earlier when I was sort of saying I miss it, I do miss it. And I think I made one big mistake when we moved to the Amex. I've got a seat in the 1901 club.
Oh, go on.
It's a tumbleweed.
Yeah.
The reason being that the guy that I sit with, he'd been a Lord Albion fan much longer than I am. He'd been to Gillingham and all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah. He said, I've done my bit now. I want comfort. I want, you know. I thought, okay. So I went along with it. So we did that. And the seats are brilliant. The seats are absolutely brilliant. Everything else about it is everything I loathe. The dress code. Don't get me started on the dress code. And I appreciate why it works. I do understand that. And
well,
I know
the way you're dressed today, I'm assuming you're not in the 1901.
Actually, no, this is fine. I just find it bizarre that you could go to a Michelin restaurant and actually wear clothes that they wouldn't let you into the 1901 club with.
Brilliant.
And I just... but I have, you know, I have very infantile authority
what
issues.
What kind of fry-ups do they sell in the Michelin?
The one that has the breakfast there, mate. You tell us.
Well, in a Michelin star restaurant is what I was talking about.
No, I've never eaten in the.
I can say at the Network Albion breakfast meeting, they do actually have hash browns with the breakfast.
There you go.
Oh dear. All right, I'll concede the hash browns, but I really shouldn't.
That doesn't necessarily mean that's the definitive.
No,
breakfast.
I get the point.
They could be getting it wrong.
It's a corporate.
But anyway,
breakfast.
Going back to what you're saying, I think the thing about With Dean, it was just it was a completely different experience, and I'm looking at it partly because it was my first experience, and that's what I associate. You know, I associate that with sort of coming on board, as it were. And getting to know everybody and making new friends and the whole... You felt more a part of things, and I'm sure if I approach things differently these days, I could still feel a part of things, but I think the whole way of things now, which is very slick, very professional, huge corporate element... I would be lying if I said my heart was in it as much as it was 10 years ago.
I mean, this isn't necessarily a criticism of the club per se, but I do think that there are people that have been in 1901 that would like to go back into
the mainstream,
go back into the terraces, and it's not that easy to do. So
there's a waiting list, and I don't suppose the people in 1901 are necessarily going to be at the front of the queue, are they?
They have to go back into the waiting list.
The queue,
and I think
that,
you know, if you've got, presumably it's just moving a seat, but
I doubt it. I don't think it works that
but
way.
But we digress. But let's move on to Wednesday night. It was our first appearance on the BBC in a live fixture
you
since 1983.
You love that.
Is that the one that went viral? Is that the
yes.
Well, as a TV critic, you know, you should be all over this.
All over this.
Yeah, but what about one? The only one I could say that comes close is the Wrexham replay was shown on S4C, and on my iPlayer, S4C, you get through BBC. That's apart from that. Mm. That's it. So it doesn't really count.
And I do believe, I think we also broke ground in the fact that it was the first time we've ever had a live game on BBC Two.
BBC One and BBC Two, yes.
But yeah.
In front of an empty stadium.
But okay, it was it was mostly the expected changes, apart from young Victor Gokores getting a star.
Now, he was the one that a lot of people were screaming for after he came on as a sub, because, you know, he was the one that looked sort of like kind of lively and up for it. But I couldn't help feeling that it was, I mean, it's not a step too far. I mean, it's far from it. You can't, one should never ever criticise someone after a first game. And it's not as though he was poor or anything like that. I just felt that what he offered in the first game, he was struggling to match in the second game. And this is constantly what happens when a player starts. They come on versus being a sub, and a player coming on as a sub, other team are slightly tired, etc., etc. And the old cliche about being an impact player, it rings true. Gyökeres was very, very good when he came on in the first game, less so in the replay.
Yeah, I mean, there was things that he did really, really well in the game, and there was things
where he kept it going.
And there was things where I thought he was slightly naive as well, and maybe could have done a little bit better. But I mean, you know, he's young; he's going to learn that, and he's not going to learn that by sitting on the bench. So
that said, I still think he's a bit further down the pecking order when it comes to picking a Premier League team. I suspect he'll be on the bench for the Derby game. Sorry, for the Frank Lampard's Derby game.
I do apologise. I suspect he'll be on the bench today.
Maybe,
but it will be. But there was a couple of instances where if he'd have followed a shot in, he would have been.
But then if McGranny had balls, the
ball came across and he just instead of like continuing his run
and he stopped
and the ball would have been there for a tap in. There's a couple of instances.
I appreciate that.
We don't really want to talk about the whole Rodriguez Bong thing, do we?
No.
But
it's all a little bit unsavoury, and they weren't on the pitch at the same time. You just got to realise, you know, Brighton fans sing what they were singing, West Brom fans did what they did. It's polarised opinion between the two sets of fans. We're still none the wiser as to what happened. It's just if anything that it's the clubs themselves, I suspect, have moved on. It's the fans that haven't, and I think that is probably the issue that needs to be dealt with from here on in, if there is anything to deal with at all.
No, I mean, nothing was proved, and
you can't deal with it though, can you? There's always going to be. I just think with the whole thing about football crowds and chants, etc. I mean, fortunately, thank goodness, we have moved on from an awful lot of the worst elements of it.
Yes.
But you can't police things to a fine degree. If you've got, you know, a few dozen people who want to be poisonous and toxic and violent, they're going to be it. You can't. Yeah. There's no way you can root that out from even the most well organised and well run.
Because they will be like that. And when people say, "Are you like that at home?" Yes, they are.
Well, there was a fabulous campaign in France about this sort of thing, where they had various people going into the butchers and the boulangerie and the flower shops and the supermarkets.
Your Spanish is appalling.
And going in there and shouting all this dogs abuse.
And would you behave like that?
You wouldn't do it in normal life, so why should you do it in the stadium? And
you can't help feeling that some people do. I mean, you know, not to chastise everyone, but there are. It's as has been said so many times over the past 40 years, this isn't necessarily football's problem, this is society's problem. Mm. But you're quite right. Apart from that, let's move on and talk about the footy, okay. Or David Bowie, which we're going to talk about.
Well, Bissouma, he shot from 40 yards and forced his Bond to tip around the post. I mean,
Bissouma, there was a lot of shots on.
Please don't ask me to talk about Bissouma again during a technical hitch. Okay. Ready? Okay. But, I've got nothing more to say.
The weird thing about that game is, and I did take the point of the commentators, is that they, as neutrals, they kind of enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't exactly blood and thunder and what have you, but there were plenty of chances, plenty of shots on goal. Both teams, again, were woeful with their finishing. And which was highlighted by the two goals within the 90 minutes, both defensive nightmares.
Still convinced you didn't have stood. But
actually, can we actually address that then? Because the issue that you're talking about is, can a player score while he's off the pitch? The answer is yes, of course he can. It's very unusual. The thing about being off the pitch is what they mean is that a referee has given them permission to go off the pitch. If you go off the pitch without permission, you're going to get a yellow card. But if you're natural, so supposing you're running around a defender, you can go off the pitch in order to come back on again. So in this instance, they're talking about being off the pitch is when the referee has given you permission to be off the pitch, and then has to give you permission to come back on. That's what they're talking about not scoring, not being able to score while off the pitch. So this whole thing, it's not actually your physical thing. It's actually about as to whether you're actually part of the game at the time.
When he's standing behind the goalpost, holding on and poking his foot round, it just feels.
Well, the thing is, Balogun just walked away. That's the point.
Yeah, I'm trying to completely ignore the really, really, really bad defending.
Yes. And talk about, you can't. Balogun just walked away, and he just looks so nonchalant.
Everyone just turned off. Yeah. Everyone just turned off. But the fact
Balogun turned off. I mean, he was the one on the post.
Well, Button did as well.
Well, no, he leapt up, and it was actually Dan Byrne, who was a lot taller than him, got the header in. I don't think you know, because he went for it. It's just that the ball came looping down. I initially thought it was actually going out of play, but that's not the point. You play to the whistle, and if the whistle says it's goal kick, or if the whistle says it's foul, but no, he just walked away. Utterly incredible.
Okay. Andoni, elbow, lucky boy. Not lucky boy, because he got a three-match suspension, and we will miss him. And
the astonishing thing is the referee was looking at it at the time. Now, if it's not in his report, then yes, it's going to happen. But, you know, at the time, well, we saw the replay, and yes, he was trying to be sort of all hustly and bustly and muscly, but, you know, he did throw his elbow up. He did catch the fella. It's a red card offence, and has got the same ban.
Can I just ask, because I have to admit, I watched this game in the pub during a pub quiz. Cleveland Arms, by the way.
Good pub. Used to live around the corner from it.
Fantastic pub quiz. We came third. it's great to watch, because I'm very bad at watching us on TV because I have a persecution complex. I'm convinced that Match the Day hates us. I'm convinced that Sky hates us.
It's not you, mate. Not just you.
And, even they couldn't edit this one.
Every commentary is weighted against us, etc., etc. And then I think I've got to grow up a bit, seriously, because everybody thinks that. Seriously. I speak to a friend of mine's a Burnley fan. And he says that's exactly how we feel all the time. So whatever. But without the commentary on and with the distraction of the quiz where I'm just sort of half watching, I watched that incident without any sort of commentary or any crowd noise or whatever to sort of sway my judgment whatsoever. And it just looked so blatant from instantly.
Yeah.
And I was happy and it didn't bother me because I felt pleasantly detached. It was like watching on some sort of medication where you just feel as if, it's okay, whatever.
You felt all fuzzy, did you?
It was a fuzzy feeling. It was fuzzy, even better by the end, of course.
Yeah, you didn't have to put up with Kevin Kilbane honking, but it's sadly the right decision.
Okay, what do we make of Jahan Bash as a number 10?
I really enjoyed his game. I thought he kept the ball moving. I thought his skill. I mean, he was getting there. He was busy. He was doing what Bissouma normally does, but albeit in a much more crowded area. And he wasn't. He was playing across, so he was doing an awful lot of wide stuff. Crossing, again, not brilliant, but, the approach play, like I say, so many of the players, approach play, really good. For me, his best game for us. I was genuinely pleased. That said, doesn't necessarily follow he's going to be playing in the Premier League, but I suspect, he will be playing against Frank Lampard's Derby.
Right, okay. Okay, and Dan Byrne, also another good game for him?
Absolutely. I think from about probably 20, 25 minutes onwards, we kind of, not say bossed the game, but we got much more into it. We are notoriously slow starters, got so much more into it, and everyone did put in a shift. Like I say, Gokori's, you realise a certain level of limitation, but Knockup was, for me, our man of the match. He had his best game for a long time. And it's not the fact we're playing a championship side. West Brom are not rubbish.
Has he done enough to get himself in the team for today, though?
No. Because I think he ran himself stupid on Wednesday, so he probably might be rest.
Whenever I watch him, I mean, he's just a bundle of frustration.
Yes.
Where does he go from here? I mean, in terms of getting that first team place?
I think it's a case of him getting the games in and having good performances will actually then give him that confidence rather than, and hopefully will ease that frustration. You want to talk about the equaliser, don't you?
Andoni, well, he was lucky to be on the pitch.
Well, yeah, I mean, therein lies the point about sort of the referee, well, not doing us a favour, but, not spotting what he did. Yes, it's the correct thing, he got banned, but hey, he did his piece to get us through to the third round.
I mean, I've got that. Andoni intercepts a poor Baggy's pass and he fires it past Bond to equalise. And the next thing I've got here, Murray makes it 2-1 with a cocksure finish.
Oh, there's so many references we could do for them. So I know that you want to be careful here, Mike, but describe that goal for us.
In terms of how the actual moment of impact?
No, the part of his body, basically. Let's hear it, because that's all what everyone wants to talk about.
Well, put it this way: normally, when you suffer an injury there during the course of a game and you're rolling around nagging, the commentators describe you as having been winded. I always remember that. Yeah. Winded. There's no wind involved, is it? But I wonder if there was any pain.
Well, he just seemed to carry on.
Yeah,
you know.
But it would hurt, would it not?
But as an argument goes, it'll never stand up in court.
It just goes to show what a baller he is.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Is this going to carry on? Or
yeah, well... Okay. and the question was, will he score again?
Okay. But, I mean, he did go on and he made the game safe.
Yeah, he scored a more, sort of a routine goal.
In brackets, it says, it's brackets, pen, close brackets, obviously.
Yeah. And I like... And according to my stats,
you reckon it's his 200th career goal?
According to Soccer Base, it's his 200th career goal.
Yeah, we've queried that before.
Where's the area of doubt?
The area of doubt is it didn't include goals from the Wilmington Hammerheads.
No, you can't include that.
And it didn't include Barrow.
Okay.
Because, oh, right, okay.
When does your career officially start?
So,
how many goals did he score in Canada then?
I don't know. It doesn't have those on there. But I mean, according to that,
200 career goals in England.
And if he's on 99 league goals for Brighton now, so one more for his 100th league goal for the
Albion. Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, so it's another T-shirt coming out.
Yeah.
No, it's good. We're into the next round. It was, I think, probably deserved. I mean, you know, West Brom, they were a bit unlucky. Robson Kanu, who hitherto had been a donkey, and yet still, I'm amazed at that goal that he scored for Wales against Belgium, you know, a couple of years ago. That was an incredible goal. He was unlucky, went down. West Brom went down to 10 men, and they just looked absolutely out on their feet at the time. So, yeah, I think a deserved victory for us.
Okay. Well, that's about all we've got time for. So I was
Sorry, just very, very quickly, just quickly to announce that the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Game 2019 will take place on the Friday the 26th of April at the new venue of Woodside Road, Worthing. It would be great if you could all come along. We'll give you more details in the coming weeks.
And we're off to watch the Albion to play Burnley, who we haven't beaten since August 2003, when we won two goals with goals from Andrew Cross and Leo Ojoa. Of the team that they...
Hang on, are you talking at home that we won? Because we won when Craig McHale-Smith scored an overhead kick.
That was before that.
Was it?
Yeah.
2003, did you say?
2013.
Oh, I thought you said 2003.
Only one player remains from that team.
Barnes.
No. It was Solly March, who came on as 89th minute substitute.
Okay. Wow.
But so
you know.
I know, it's ridiculous. So we're just on that note.
Silly Willie stars shine.